Yeah, this is going to be a little different. So thank you for coming. And I'll begin my talk, The Fractal Nature of the Spiritual Journey. All right, so when we talk about the spiritual journey, we use a certain set of words, including but not limited to the ones shown here. The concepts behind these words are perhaps best described using narratives. For example, temptation is illustrated in the gospel writer's telling of Jesus' encounter with Satan while fasting in the wilderness. In Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, Aragorn demonstrates the concept of hope by engaging the enemy, even though it seems that Frodo and the ring must surely have been captured. The realm of science uses a different set of words. Again, here are but a few examples. The words in the bottom box have rigorous definitions and can be described using mathematics. The same cannot be said of the words in the Can the language of mathematics be used to communicate spiritual concepts? The answer appears to be no, and this answer seems to be supported by Stephen Jay Gould's concept of non-overlapping magisteria, as well as the findings of CTNS in the late 90s. However, look at how Gould himself describes the concept of non-overlapping magisteria. He says, "Science and religion do not glower at each other, but interdigitate in patterns of complex fingering and at every fractal scale of self-similarity. Perhaps the shape of the boundary between science and religion is fractal. If the boundary is fractal, then it should be possible to describe its shape using the language of mathematics. But how might we explore this idea?" What I want to share in the next 15 minutes is an idea for a fractal-based metaphor for concepts we encounter on our spiritual journeys. This metaphor, if valid, may help us better describe and understand the relationship between science and religion. And if you aren't sure what a fractal is, you'll find out soon. All right, so the fractal we'll use is the Mandelbrot set, named after the French mathematician Benoit Mandelbrot, whose early renderings of the set were published in his book called The Fractal Geometry of Nature. We're going to take a quick look at how the Mandelbrot set is calculated, but don't worry, this won't be on the test. The thing to note is that the calculation is relatively simple, but produces a complex fractal. A graph of the Mandelbrot set is generated using the following approach. Choose a point on the complex plane represented by the complex number C, and starting with the Z equals 0, iterate through the simple formula shown here. There we go. We'll start with the point corresponding to the complex number 1 plus 0.5i. After each iteration, we take the answer from the left side and plug it back into the equation on the right side. As we iterate, one of two things may happen. The first possibility is that z eventually grows larger than 4, which means it's going to spiral off towards infinity. Such a point has failed the test and is outside the set. And so we're going to color that point a shade of gray based on how many iterations it took for z to grow large. This particular point took only 3 iterations, so it gets colored a rather light shade of gray. The second possibility is that z remains bounded, either growing smaller with each iteration or bouncing between two or more values, as shown here for the point representing the complex number 0 plus 1i. In this case, C is inside the set. Points inside the set we will color black. By testing a regular grid of points, we can build a picture of the Mandelbrot set. The darker the shade of gray, the more iterations it took to determine that the point was outside the set. Again, the key takeaway here is that the Mandelbrot set is generated using a relatively simple equation and iterative process. The fractal nature of the Mandelbrot set is already somewhat apparent, but it becomes exceedingly clear as we take a closer look at the edge of the set. There are filaments that extend away from the main body of the set. Within these filaments are smaller versions of the main body. I'll refer to these as mini-brots. As we magnify, I'm indicating some of these mini-brots with red circles. The filaments are actually composed entirely of strands of mini-brots of various sizes. Notice, too, the variety of patterns evident at different locations around the edge of the set. Deeper explorations reveal that the patterns build on each other to produce novel patterns at different scales and locations. This novelty is a primary reason why I've chosen the Mandelbrot set for our metaphor. Speaking of which, it's time we start developing our metaphor for the spiritual journey. There are three key elements involved in the metaphor, and the first of these is time. Time will be represented by the iterative bands that surround the exterior of the Mandelbrot set. Here are the first five iterative bands. I'm going to change the coloring scheme to make them clearer. I'm going to zoom in and draw some more bands. These iterative bands are formed by all the points, that is, all the values of C, which take the same number of iterations for Z to grow large. For the purpose of our metaphor, we can think of each iterative band as representing a moment in time, and the passage of time for the individual will be represented by an arrow traversing the bands as shown here, always in the direction from lower iterations to higher. The bands become thinner and more detailed as we move towards the edge of the set, but we will magnify as we proceed. If we increase the iterations, we get more iterative bands and they start getting pinched in more and more places. The parts that aren't pinched form the second element of our metaphor. We'll refer to these unpinched sections as apparent paths or just paths. I'm going to zoom in and use the laser here to trace a few of the paths in this image. These apparent paths will represent the paths one can take on one's spiritual journey. So, if you enjoy hiking in the mountains, it may help to imagine the iterative bands as contours on a topographic map, and the paths as the relatively flat valley portions. Alternatively, some people say that these paths remind them of tree branches. In our metaphor, the branching of the paths will represent different choices available during the spiritual journey. Furthermore, the relative width and steepness of a path will represent the amount of willful effort required to traverse it. We'll unpack these ideas a bit more in a moment. The last element needed for our metaphor is a representation for the divine. In our metaphor, the divine is going to be represented by all the points in the Mandelbrot set, including mini brots, such as the small one visible here. In our explorations, we'll find that there are many places where a mini brot is not visible, because most of the mini-brots are too tiny to be rendered visible at any given magnification. When no mini-brot is visible, it will be like a time when God's presence is weakly felt in one's journey. If we continue to zoom in and a mini-brot appears, this will be like coming into the presence of the divine. Okay. So we've identified the elements of a metaphor where we liken the spiritual journey to the course one might take through the apparent paths that lead through the iterative bands towards the edge of the Mandelbrot set. With these basic elements in place, it's time to further unpack and explore our metaphor. We'll do this by looking at several different ways one can approach the spiritual journey and see whether our metaphor offers any parallels. So, to start, let's assume that the goal of one's spiritual journey is to draw near to God. There are certainly other valid ways to express the goal of one's spiritual journey, but drawing close to God will make the most sense in the context of our metaphor. We'll look at three basic ways one can approach the spiritual journey and evaluate those ways in light of our metaphor. In Matthew chapter 7, as Jesus gives the Sermon on the Mount, he speaks of a narrow gate and a wide gate. He also refers to the wide gate as a broad way. He describes the broad way as having a wide gate, leading to destruction, and being the way that many take. I'm quoting there, paraphrasing Matthew 7, verses 12 through 14. People have different ideas about what Jesus is talking about. For our purposes here, let us consider the broad way as being easy and or attractive, which would explain why so many people take it. Furthermore, when Jesus says that the broad way leads to destruction, this suggests that it's not a way by which we can draw near to God. In our fractal metaphor, there also appears to be One second, please. This was working earlier this morning. Yes, that's right. That's right. Huh. Well, I'll continue without the animation. In our fractal metaphor, there also appears to be a Broadway. When we encounter choices of paths, it is a choice between narrow and broad apparent paths. What happens if we repeatedly choose the broadest path? What happens is we find ourselves moving in an endless spiral of self-similarity. Even though the presence of filaments seems promising, there is, in fact, no mini Mandelbrot set at the center of the spiral that we would encounter were we to always travel down the broadest available path. I really hope my later animations work. I'll say, in order to find a mini-brot, we would need to turn away from the broad path and take a different path. I'll say more about this different path in just a few moments. Interestingly, the longer we move into a bottomless spiral, the longer we would need to travel the different path in order to find the mini-brot. So in some sense, by following an endless spiral, we are moving further away from finding a mini-brot. And similarly, when I choose the broad way in my spiritual journey, I am, in some sense, distancing myself from God. Your prayers are appreciated for my animations. All right. So taking the broad way fails to help us draw near the divine, but maybe it's just too simple. Oh, my goodness. I don't know, because nothing's changed from this morning. I could try and bring up my laptop, but I think I'd lose too much. So a second approach to the spiritual journey is to follow a set of rules or laws that describe which choices are acceptable and which are not.
Are you sure your first idea was not following the Broadway?
Peanut Gallery appears to be in the front today. So we're talking about the second approach, which is the approach of rules. And the religious leaders in Jesus' day had expanded the familiar Ten Commandments into 613 detailed rules that, if followed, were supposed to result in being right with God. In our metaphor, we can also specify rules such as choose the first major path on the right and then the second major path on the left and repeat. Perhaps unsurprisingly, following this simple rule leads us into another never-ending pattern. It's not the spiral formed by the broad way, but this rule-defined path still doesn't lead us to encounter a mini-brot. Maybe this rule is too simple. What about more complicated rules? Could there be a set of rules that I could follow to find a mini-brot? My initial research suggests that any set of rules can only, at best, serve as a guide to drawing close to any given mini-brot. That's going to be the end of that animation.
Very cool animation.
Oh, thank you. We'll keep that handy because I may need it again. Any set of rules can only serve as a guide to drawing close to any given mini-brot. There are so many different patterns of apparent paths in the fractal of the Mandelbrot set that it would take a very large set of rules, perhaps even more than 613, to create explicit turn-by-turn instructions for finding a mini-brot from any given starting point. All right. So the last approach we'll consider today is not based on rules, at least in the traditional sense. Instead, it's based on learning about the character of God, learning to recognize how He is at work in the world, and following the guidance of His Spirit. As indicated by Jesus Himself, this approach looks strange, perhaps even foolish, from the perspective of the other approaches. At times it may seem that this third approach is counterproductive. Consider Jesus' decision to stop and hear the story of the bleeding woman. His disciples, and Lazarus' family, thought this was a poor choice on Jesus' part, but because of that choice, many more came to believe. So how might this approach appear in our metaphor? Let's see. Ah, that one's working. As we journey, we learn about the character of the divine through the different patterns we encounter. In exploring the Mandelbrot set, we soon learn that many brots can be found where we observe a geometric increase in the number of patterns. In particular, there's going to be a mini-brot appearing in this area right here. Learning to notice these patterns may be likened to learning to recognize God at work in our world and our lives. Having recognized patterns indicating where a mini-brot may be found, we must navigate carefully in order to approach it. Note that the apparent paths leading into these patterns will, at times, have us traveling in directions that seem to be heading around or even away from the mini-brot, but these are nevertheless the right ways to go. Attempting to make a beeline for the mini-brot would actually take us down paths from which the mini-brot could not be reached. Notice also that there can sometimes be more than one right path. The second arrow shows that it is possible to choose a different path and still draw near the same mini-brot. Note that the two paths being traversed are of different widths, representing different amounts of willful effort required to choose and traverse the paths. This may reflect the ability of different people to have different experiences and draw different and make different choices at different times and yet still draw near to God. Consider the spiritual journey of the Apostle Peter versus Paul, for example. Both men had encounters with God in the form of Jesus Christ, but Peter went from being named Rock to being called Satan, and he denied Jesus three times. Paul, on the other hand, was a hardened persecutor of Christians until his experience on the road to Damascus. Every disciple has a different story, a different testimony of how their journey has twisted and turned. But all disciples share the experience of God's presence as manifested in their stories of grace, hope, faith, and love. Our metaphor seems capable of mimicking some basic approaches to the spiritual journey, but what of spiritual concepts like faith, hope, and love? Some spiritual concepts seem to be clearly represented. For example, hope is represented in the fact that no matter what winding path we've taken, we can have hope that a mini-brot may be about to appear. Free will may be represented by the idea that there are a selection of paths that we can choose from. Sin, in the sense of missing the mark, can easily be likened to choosing a path that leads us away from, rather than towards, a nearby mini-brot. It's less clear how other key spiritual concepts, such as love and grace, may be represented in the metaphor, if they're represented at all. For as rich as our metaphor may be, it is not without its limitations. One kind of limitation stems from the simple way we're representing the concepts of time and willful effort. For example, our simple metaphor is not likely to accommodate Einstein's theory of general relativity. But these kinds of oversimplifications are probably acceptable as long as we're only discussing a metaphor. Other limitations stem from the use of the Mandelbrot set, which, while exhibiting much surprising novelty, may not be a sufficiently complex fractal to serve as a metaphor for all possible spiritual journeys. In addition, the equation which generates the Mandelbrot set is deterministic, and is therefore it's therefore debatable whether our metaphor provides sufficient openness for the concept of free will. It's also unclear whether or how the influence of external events might be represented in our metaphor. Profound events, such as the loss of a loved one or of meeting Jesus Christ, can catalyze people into changing deeply ingrained patterns of behavior and thinking. If our metaphor isn't able to represent such events, it would severely limit its usefulness. Bottom line here is that we would be unwise to press this metaphor too far, at least in its current state. So we've been exploring a fractal-based metaphor for the spiritual journey. We've been doing so to see whether such a metaphor might help us describe and understand what Stephen Jay Gould has described as a fractal boundary between the realms of science and religion. Our metaphor has shown a promising richness that seems capable of describing a variety of key concepts and approaches to the spiritual journey using a mathematically generated fractal from the realm of science. Let that sink in for a moment. We've been looking at a mathematically understandable object that appears able to illustrate spiritual concepts such as hope, free will, and sin. This is an astounding and, frankly, somewhat frightening idea. Of course, further investigation is needed. One of my objectives is to generate these paths as three-dimensional terrain that can then be analyzed using spatial information systems, or GIS, which is part of my background. There is a need for further exploration and understanding of the different journey approaches and their effects. I'm currently reading Fowler's book on the different kinds of faith. Can't remember the title right now. And lastly, if the metaphor holds up well enough, we might see if it's capable of modeling some real-world phenomena, perhaps by correlating measurable aspects of the fractal paths to actual behavioral data from psychology or ethics. I encourage you to consider this metaphor from the perspective of your own spiritual journey, and I welcome your comments. Thank you.